So something that I heard a lot growing up and that we continue to hear now as parents from other parents our same age or a little bit ahead of us is, well, I'm doing it for my kids because I want them to be inspired by what I am pursuing. And so this comes up a lot in the mother entrepreneurial space where women will say, I'm working on this business because I want my kids to see me being a Proverbs 31 woman. Or it can come up with a variety of different goals or dreams or things that we're still pursuing in parenthood. And Elisha and I just wanted to visit that concept of we're doing it for the kids. How important is it for our children to be inspired by what they see us pursuing? And to what extent should we be pursuing goals and dreams that have been on our heart, businesses, things of that nature? And how helpful is it for our kids to see? How important of an ingredient is that? So anyways, I'm excited to dive into this episode.
Yeah, but before we get going, this is the 10-year anniversary of Voberg Music Academy. And some of you maybe are already thinking about what you're doing for your kids' schooling this fall. Maybe some of you are resisting those thoughts, but hey, whether or not you are thinking about it or not thinking about it, fall is coming and we want to make music lessons as easy as possible for you. And so we curate our program so that it's really conducive to families learning together. So if you want any of your children to learn piano, fiddle, guitar, ukulele, mandolin, you can subscribe to any of those instruments, each of those, and you can all learn together. We also want to make it as easy as possible to like try different instruments, because a lot of people don't know what instrument's going to work for their child. You know, maybe they have an old violin that their great aunt gave them, and you know, they're like, should we learn something on this violin? And they don't even know if it's the right size for their child, right? They don't know if it's a nice violin or anything like that. And so we want to just be able to educate people, equip people, get them started in lessons, because getting started really is the biggest hurdle in music. Learning your first few notes, your first few chords, learning your first song. And then at that point, you can pick your path, right, with music. The world of music is endless, but we just want to get you started. We want to get your kids started. So for the 10-year anniversary, we're offering 25% off your first month. You can check that coupon below and get started.
Great.
Was that a good commercial?
It was. It was a good commercial. Not as good as the one that you shared in Top 5 Tuesday. We had people, you guys know, Elisha and I, when we first started Voberg Music Academy, all we had was Facebook. And we're like, what do we do to let people know about this? And so obviously the first thing that came to mind was acting out cringy skits. And we loved them. And it was embarrassing to post. And it's still embarrassing, but also it's funny. And we like them.
Yeah, I don't think they're cringy. It's just good.
I think in a good way. Like they make you feel something.
Exactly.
You feel something. I ran into a friend's mom the other day and she goes, I have been watching those skits back to back to back. I had no clue they were there. And I'm going to go find some more today. I was like, oh no.
The long lost archive of Voberg Music Academy commercials. You know, you mentioned, we weren't really considering the thought of pursuing things like you talked about, business or hobbies for the sake of our children. I had never questioned that sentiment that is articulated very often. Growing up, I would hear it. People would say, well, your kids need to see you, you know, working hard. They need to see you pursuing your dreams or, you know, developing skill sets because that's going to inspire them. And I think it was literally yesterday, I mentioned something along the lines of like, oh, I need to start competing at these fiddle contests. So the kids can see that I still play. Like I want to see that.
Well, because every time we go to a contest, someone tells you that.
They always tell me that, right?
Because your kids, you need to inspire your kids. You need to show them you still are competing.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I need to start competing again. But when you go to fiddle contests, we've got four kids that compete. I back them all up on the guitar and ideally they're playing multiple rounds. And so it's like that. That's all I'm thinking about when I'm at these contests, and yet people would always say that. I'm like, you're right. You're right. I should compete. Like I want my kids to know that, you know, I still value this. And actually, the same thing came up at the jiu-jitsu tournament we did with the boys a little while back, where we brought the boys, and people are saying like, well, you need to get out there. Your boys need to see you compete. And I felt like I was so consumed with just being there well, one, like, you know, wrestling the younger kids that were not competing, and then and then supporting the boys that were competing. And it just seemed so, like, so much extra to compete myself. And yet I still believed that it was a value to go compete for myself so that my boys could see me doing that. And you basically just questioned that last night. You're like, you know, I don't care. I don't think the kids care whether or not you compete at the fiddle contest or at the jiu-jitsu tournament. I just think they want you to, like, be there to support them. That's what they care the most about. And I was like, I think you're right.
Well, I think this is the thing. It's not that if you can't have all of it, it can't all be great. But as parents, we have limited means when it comes to finances, money, time. It depends.
Finances and money. Yeah.
Yeah. Both. Finances, energy, and time, yeah. I think is more what I was thinking. And so with these limited resources as a parent, often in order to do, like, you only have so much time to invest in this activity. Mm. And often you have to steal time from one to give it to the other. Mm. So as Elisha is our kid's fiddle instructor, he works with them from like 30 minutes a day to a couple hours a day. And that's fiddle time. Like, how much time is there to devote to music, right? We kind of have like a couple hours a day or in the evening or whatever. Whereas if he's going to be practicing on his own, then that robs from that time. It's like we have unlimited time to practice things. Yeah. And so I think I brought it up in context of when we go to competitions, it's very rare that you see a good second generation at something. So like Elisha was a great first generation fiddler, right? But then when we go to competitions, it's interesting when I see the people his age still competing, how it's rare their kids are competing at a very excellent level, maybe at the same level they competed at when they were that age. And so I do think it's just kind of been something to note is, well, maybe their kids are more inspired by their parent playing, but they might be more inspired by just doing better themselves at the event or feel more like they were being poured into by their parent at the event. And so I think that when we're just faced with these limited resources, I think it's cool when parents can pursue excellence, but at the same time, I know I felt a lot more poured into as a child when I felt like my parents were helping me pursue excellence than when I saw them do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think everybody agrees. I say everybody. I think most people.
Wow. I was like, that was actually pretty good. If everybody agrees.
I think everybody agrees. I think most people agree that when parents prioritize their career over their child's development and well-being and just relationship, then that is it usually has a negative effect on that child and their relationship with the parent. And so we see it with the career, but oftentimes I think we will take things like, you know, hobbies or passion projects, or side hustles even. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't even think we're trying to justify it. I think we just believe it. I've just believed literally, and I'm not convinced one way or the other right now. I hadn't had the concept like questioned until last night, because I had just lived under the assumption that the best way to inspire our children and to motivate our children, to pour into our children, is first and foremost, like, lead by example. And that is true, I think, with your faith. And I think it's true with character and discipline. But then when it comes to like extracurricular things or where you're putting your time, there needs to be a shifting of like, okay, my parents poured into me. I reap the benefits from that to this day. And I still am I'm using those things that my parents poured into me, you know, like to provide for my family. But I want there to be an emphasis now on where I'm putting my energy when it comes to extra time, because everybody's going to have work that they need to do and provision that they need to do. But then there are just like those couple hours per day. If that's a luxury, if you've got a couple hours per day. And it's like, are you going to pour into your kids' development, or are you going to use that to further your hobbies? And that can be, for me, things like, you know, music, jiu-jitsu, racing, right? Like, you know, triathlon, Whoa.
He's glitching.
I needed to say it three times to emphasize the try. training for triathlons, or really any other type of sporting events that can just take a lot of time versus shifting into that, again, supportive role of taking your kids to practice. And this isn't being a total bystander, right? Because I know I was big time encouraged and fired up when my dad played basketball with me. When he would come out and rebound for me, I felt so loved and poured into. And similar when he would take me to practices, and then when he would be there for the games, that meant a lot, you know, to me. Yet I don't think I cared one way or the other if he was a part of his men's league, mm-hmm. right? Like, which he was sometimes and he wasn't other times.
Yeah, I think that same way, like once Elisha and I were talking about this, we were kind of like flashing back to our childhood and we're like, okay, so what were the things our parents did well? When were we really proud of them? When did they inspire us? I think both of our parents on both sides really inspired us with their work ethic their whole time or their whole life. But it's just kind of like, where is that work ethic devoted towards? So like my mom, she's super athletic, and I remember being so proud of her and impressed, and I still am to this day, with her crazy athletic prowess, because I remember we were trying to learn our volleyball serve. We started volleyball late, like we went in as freshmen, having never touched a volleyball. And my mom was just out in the backyard, like, here, I'll show you how to serve. And she's had like 10 kids at this point, and just like throws it up and overhand serves. And to this day, it's still annoying to me because I still can't, like, now I blame the fact that I can't serve on my kids, but my mom still can. And so she's really good at that. Like we would go play tennis and she'd pull out a racket. She hadn't played for years and years and just like crush us all in tennis. And I remember being really proud of her in those moments, but I don't think I would have had that same, I don't think I would have had that same, wow, my mom's amazing, if she was taking 2 hours to go to practice every night to play in her tennis league. Right. I mean, I might've been like, okay, good for you. I'm glad you're having fun. But I'm not saying that would have inspired me to be more athletic.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think that is, because that last part is what I think gets convoluted. It's like, yes. are we inspiring our children more by doing the thing ourselves, or are we inspiring them more by facilitating them learning it or training mm-hmm. them or being a part of their development?
Or like you mentioned, doing it with them. Like doing my mom would take tennis lessons with us as an adult. And that was really fun. She enjoyed it. But it was something she did with us. Or like my dad, I loved that he loves skiing. You guys all know that. And we would all go up skiing. And I remember being very proud of my dad. And I still am when I'd see him like do a backflip off something on skis, or he skis with really good form. And again, these are things that he built in his childhood. He built this foundation of excellence. And now he's able to show off, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term. And it was inspiring and it mm-hmm. made me very proud of him. But I can't say the ski trips that he went off and did on his own with like business guys or things like that were like, wow, that's really inspirational to me.
Sure. And nothing wrong with that. You know, like,
again, I'm not saying any of these things, and that's good to clarify. We aren't saying any of this is wrong.
Yeah.
Is it a worthy place to put our time for inspiring our kids? Like,
yes.
Is it this going to help our kids' development? It's not saying that we can't enjoy things that we enjoy as parents.
Yes. Just categorize it maybe for what it is.
Yes, exactly. Like I'm doing this thing. It's fun for me. It might even be a take from the family, but it's going to be enjoyable versus like, I'm doing this for you, Sonny.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
It's like, I never asked you to do that yeah. for me, Dad. Like I want you to get, you know, rebound for me or something, you know? And yeah. I think that it's funny because prior to our kids starting sports, you know, just a year or so ago, I really was a lot more selfish in my understanding of what sports were worth pouring into. And I would look at my childhood and think that I could kind of get some of the positives out of the things like youth orchestra that my parents drove me to, you know, twice a week when I was younger, fiddle competitions that they took me to around the whole country, fiddle camps, basketball practice, basketball camps, tournaments, you know, all the games. I thought, okay, this is not very time efficient. I'm going to find ways to like streamline this with my kids where we're not having to be gone in the evening or we're not having to, you know, travel for these things. And again, if somebody is able to figure that out, that's great. But I think my heart was in the wrong spot. My heart was in a place where I didn't want to personally sacrifice for the development of my children. And by sacrifice, it sounds petty, but it's like, just, yeah, give up evenings, right? It's like, man, we moved out to our property. I want to be here in the evening. Just, you know, family walks and relaxed conversation. And of course, those are really great things that we get to cherish when they happen. But that's not what my parents built their life around. They prioritized more our development in as many areas as, you know, they were able to, I guess, touch. First and foremost being spiritual formation. So I think the home is a critical place for spiritual formation and for those conversations that can transpire. But then also practical skill sets and character development and work ethic and grit. And they were willing to sacrifice mornings and evening, you know, early morning practices, weekends to go take us to practice and to take us to orchestra. And I am just at a place where it's like, okay, got it. That's just the season of life I'm in now. And I think that good parents, this is my hot take. I think good parents make that transition of it being, okay, this isn't about my pursuits anymore. My dreams, like they are my pursuit. Mm-hmm. They are my legacy. And so I want to pour into them.
Yeah. Pouring into your legacy. I think that's a really beautiful thing because when you're pouring into a legacy, you're not putting this pressure on your child to virtually achieve for you or vicariously achieve for you. It's different than that. It's seeing them as something that you're building and someone who you're building into so that they can build into the next generation. So it's a more holistic approach of building into your child, not just, again, for a self-fulfilling goal. And I think that's something that here in the West, we can kind of confuse sometimes. Yes. Yeah, it's funny. This I mentioned in the intro, but this comes up a lot in the entrepreneurial space. So when we were working a multi-level marketing company for a period of time, we would go to these trainings and a lot of moms would get up there and say how important it was for them to build this business so that their kids could see them building a business and being entrepreneurial and learning those skill sets. And it never set right with me because growing up, what's funny is my mom had built the same company growing up and she did it very sporadically when she had the time. And so there were, you know, she would go over a decade without building the business at all. It was a very full time for her. And then sometimes when a season where life freed up a little bit, she would pour into it a little bit more. And what I value about my mother looking back has nothing to do with the fact that she built that business. It was the self-control that she had to know when it wasn't going to serve the family and when to pour into us kids. And then when to decide it wasn't going to be a take for her to do this thing on the side. And that is so much more important to me than my mom being, you know, hitting some diamond level in some company,
getting the Cadillac
at the cost, because it does come at the cost of, you know, what stands out to me is like, we always had family dinners, you know, meals were always on the table. I was never wondering, is she going to have the energy to cook today? You know, the clean home, her pouring into us with homeschooling. She did so many other things first and that filled in the cracks. So I admire her for putting her time in productive places. But if she never built that business ever, then it wouldn't have changed my life. Whereas everything else she did definitely changed my life.
Right.
And so often I see women encouraging other women to like, hey, it's okay if you drop the ball in these other areas because your kids are going to be inspired by this. And I would just say, I don't think that's accurate from a child's perspective who was raised in a home with an entrepreneurial mother. She loves building business and she put that on the back burner so often. And I felt way more loved by that than ever when she was building.
Yeah. And I think the same goes for men. And this can be a really, I think, tricky thing because you see the blessing that something like starting your own business could be for your family, maybe financially or for the ability to spend more time with your family. Like, I think a lot of men will start going down the unconventional route of entrepreneurialism for really good reasons, like family first reasons or marriage first reasons. But I don't know if it always pans out that way. I think oftentimes it actually doesn't. And a 9-to-5 or a W-2 or just a more consistent or whatever you want to call it, more traditional career could actually be the very thing your family needs. Like your wife could be craving that. Your children could be needing that. And I've needed to be honest about those things with myself.
Like, there have been times where that's been the case for us.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you can get enough support around you to be like, no, this is for the kids, right? You're building this so that when they're young adults, they'll be able to have a business to work in. And it's like, well, what if you don't have a relationship with them when they're young adults, because you were spending their childhood building this thing for supposedly them, right? And that's kind of an extreme example, but I think that does occur, right? I think it's not a completely impossible, you know, scenario. And so I do think that needs to be considered when it's, again, your dad has his giant 5 filter, and to actually think through the filter of like, okay, who am I before the Lord? Like, what does being obedient to God look like today, you know, in the way that I conduct myself? And then being your wife, you know, your spouse, being the next most really important thing that like you make decisions that in that filter, and then your children, and having those top three, like actually thinking those through, right? When it comes to your career, when it comes to your pursuit of hobbies. And yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't ever do anything on your own, right? But I think it will still have an effect, and you'll start to actually, see through some of the jargon that's just more assumed than actually proven.
Yeah, it's almost like a top three filter
Yeah.
is the most helpful.
It is.
Because the two on the bottom, everything on the bottom, those last two, whether it's your health, and then I've heard the bottom B is like finances, using your God-given resources, sure, all those things.
Ministry.
Those are all the things. Everything in the bottom two are what usurp the top.
Exactly. And they're always those things.
Yeah. So it's like almost cutting them off, you know, and being like, for us, and being like, okay, these are the top three things that we're going to care about. We're willing to sacrifice everything else for those things. Then
go from there.
Yeah.
Cause the other ones, it's like, you don't even need to mention them. Like, you know, you're going to have to work, you know, you're going to go pursue, you know, whatever hobbies or, you know, other outside relationships. But those top three are the greatest threat to them are the ones that follow it, 4 and 5, you know?
Yes.
When Katie and I travel in the summer with all of our kiddos, we can't help sometimes but look at other travelers that have RVs and campers and have some level of envy towards them. We feel it, okay? I know we shouldn't, but we do, because it looks so accommodating to families, right? Your own space, a place that's air conditioned, you can get out of the heat, nap your kiddos in a pack and play. Well, we discovered Outdoorsy.com, and this is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the US. They offer thousands of RVs and campers nationwide, and they're available in your neighborhood. And there's multiple ways for you to travel and to do this. Okay, you can drive it yourself, or you could tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up to wherever you're going at your destination. Okay, that's pretty convenient. Now, there's built-in peace of mind that comes with this. There's comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, roadside assistance is included in your rental. And here's the deal. There's great value, because oftentimes these are more affordable than hotels or vacation rentals. So it's your own space, and it can be more affordable as well. If you are over 21 years of age, you do have to be 21 years in order to rent these things. The way you do it is, it's just three simple steps, okay? You go to outdoorsy.com and you search and you choose an RV that fits your family and your trip, okay? And then you book with confidence. There's insurance, there's support, there's protection included. And then you hit the road, okay? Or if you're having it delivered to your location, I guess you'd still hit the road, but you would drive in your own car, and then you'd arrive at your destination with an RV fully set up, okay? Those are the three steps. And this summer, they're actually running a campaign where when you use our code, which is FAMILY, they remove all service fees from your booking. And so when you go to outdoorsy.com, that's outdoorsy.com, and you use our code FAMILY at checkout, then you don't have to pay the service fees. They remove them. Okay. And in for instances like this, less fees are better. So this summer, if you're going to 250th anniversary celebrations, if you're going to down Route 66 to celebrate its 100th year anniversary, if you're going to fiddle contests, family camps, whatever it is, Christian conferences, go to outdoorsy.com and utilize their great services.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. I think, too, when you read historical biographies of very famous people or autobiographies, it's surprising how when they have really good relationships with their parent, usually their parent was a very supportive parent. Mm. So I think of this with, I remember we watched a documentary on Tom Brady, and it's like his dad was not a football champion, but his dad inspired him in a huge way and made him the man in the arena. Right. Yeah. And
what's even crazier about that is that Tom Brady acknowledged in the documentary that I'm not able to do this for my son.
Yeah, because like, I'm too busy
being the man in the arena. Mm-hmm. He's like, I failed to do what my dad did and be there for my boys. And you're like, whoa, I don't want that. Like, I don't like you want that legacy to be, okay, my dad poured into me. I reap the benefit of that, provide for my family, but then have my career in its proper place. So then I can then do the same to my son and then he could do the same to his, you know.
Yeah. And I think of that too with, I read a autobiography, Michelle Obama's autobiography. And I have people, I feel like I always have to clarify, like I'm not a Michelle Obama fan, but I like reading about different people's lives and the different stresses that they come under and how they get to the viewpoints that they get to, because I think we all justify our viewpoints. So it's like, how do you get here? You know? And it was really fascinating read and something that she just admires her mom so much and her dad so much. And again, it's a classic situation where she did nothing that her mom did, but use those same arguments of, well, I'm going to inspire my girls. But wow. Her mom was just a stay-at-home mom in a poor neighborhood that was doing everything she could to leverage her daughter's growth. And so it's kind of sad when that doesn't then turn around and multiply in the next generation.
Right. Yeah.
It keeps being all about you.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, they sacrificed for me. So now I get to what? Live the American dream or pursue my passions. And I think even parents will say that, right? Because a lot of parents do feel like they're sacrificing for their child. And they're like, I'm doing this so that you can pursue your dreams. I don't want you to have to work a dead end job or, you know, do something that you're not passionate about or be stuck at home with the kids or like something that they kind of resent or begrudge. First is seeing it for the gift that it is. Right. Mm-hmm. And then being like, this is actually the most glorious thing you could do. And that actually what your parents truly value does come out in the next generation.
It does.
You know? Yes. And so if your parent, if you really do value your career more than your kids, it's going to show up in your time. It's going to show up in your sentiment. And you're probably not going to be like having a lot of grandkids. Right. Like, so you see these parents that are now older and they're like, my kids, you know, I don't have any grandkids. They're married. They've been married for 15 years. No grandkids. And it's like, I don't think you valued kids. Like you certainly didn't pass that value on to your children. You passed on the love of career or the love of personal ambition and pursuing your dreams.
I do, going back to that, more is caught than taught. We can say all we want about what we're doing for our children or what we're going to model for them, but that just happens. That's not something that we, I think, even try to do. That's who we are. Like who our children actually see and what our children actually take away from their upbringing is who we are.
Wow.
As people before God.
That's sobering.
It is.
Because I want to go through the checklist and feel that that's sufficient. You know, pray with the kids, read the Bible with the kids, but they like, the authenticity of my faith or the sincerity of my conviction, it's just, they're going to know. And that's actually going to be what's, I guess, most impactful, you know, and what's transmitted, which is, yeah, makes you want to just be before the Lord. You know, you're like, really Lord, change my heart. Like, make me, you know, make me contrite before you.
Because I think that's something that all of our siblings have in common is we grew up, obviously, big families, 11 and 10 kids. A lot of our peers also grew up in big families. And it is interesting to see the families, the kids now in our generation that have chosen to have big families and the ones that have chosen to not. And again, I'm saying this chosen thing in terms of this is not reliant on fertility or, you know, things like that. With what God has given us. And so it's very interesting to see some of these families where the kids go on to have a couple children after being raised in a family of 10 children. And it's like, wow, I wonder if your parents really resented having those 10 children.
Exactly.
If they begrudged it, if they told you how expensive you all were, if they told you what they gave up so that they could parent you, if maybe they were doing it out of this sense of guilt or duty or fear, but not a duty that was a joyful duty, just a kind of feeling like God tricked you into something you had to do,
exactly.
You know, versus the families where Elisha and I did come from, where we saw the joy of children. And even before we had a conviction of children, we wanted them.
Right.
Because the joy.
Yeah.
You know, like we wanted to have, what did we say? Like 6, 5 to 7 or something children.
Originally, yeah.
Yeah. For, and all of our reasons were still the handbag reasons. They were still accessories to our life. Mm-hmm. Although we wouldn't have said that, I think.
That was our heart.
Yeah. And it was for lifestyle reasons.
Right.
Like we just thought that more children would be more fun.
Yep. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Because that's what we saw in our parents.
Yeah.
So even before we felt like there's a biblical responsibility here, there's a duty here to God. It was just this like, we just want a large family because it's more fun.
Yeah. We were using the same logic as the parents that are like, I want a son and a daughter. You know,
yeah.
And like my boys, we're going to pour into the sports with him. We're going to pour into the arts with her or whatever.
Yeah.
Like we were using the same logic. We're like, yeah, we want 7 and we're going to take him skiing and we're going to, you know, whatever.
I think it was like 6, 7 was like, if there's a bonus down the road.
Exactly.
But yeah, anyway, so it's beautiful to see how the Lord works. But also it's just kind of a warning as a parent, where it's like our value system will naturally pass on. I don't think we have to try actually to pass on our value system.
Yeah.
We do have to try to grow as people because the natural value system that passes on is just going to be who we are.
Yeah. And, you know, even if you like speaking to, you know, maybe kind of guys and that desire for wanting to maybe have a legacy or build something that, I think it's a God-given desire, you know, to have something that you can like show for your time here on earth. And a lot of times people put that into a business, you know, or people will put it into sports or, you know, various academic achievements. But our children are going to be our number one our legacy, whether it's positive or negative. And it's remarkable how even, you know, your dad talks about this a lot because he's a business coach. He coaches entrepreneurs and more as each year goes by, his clients are renewing renewing with him, because of his family and the fruit of his, you know, his children and the fruit of his, not because of his business success, not even because of his business acumen, which is great, you know, and he needed those things to kind of get into this world. But that is actually setting him apart. And as time goes on, the older you get, that's more and more and more what sets you apart. Mm-hmm. And again, this is kind of speaking from that more, you know, vainglory perspective, I guess. But it is a perspective, you know, that we're kind of like, hey, like the thing that you actually do want, even you might still be able to get by prioritizing your kids. You know, you should prioritize your kids anyways out of obedience, and you're not doing it to try to get a pat on the back or accolades. But that is, you know, like you will be known in the gates, which is something that the Proverbs talks to as being a good thing, you know, for a godly man to be known in the gates. Or to meet with the enemies and not be ashamed, you know, another thing. And it's like that, I think, first and foremost comes through how'd you parent? Like that is always going to be the first thing that shows up.
Well, I think of in Proverbs where it says you will stand before kings. You won't stand before mean men in King James, you know, meaning like average, the median.
Yeah.
But I think there are so many references in Proverbs to the way the Lord's system works. It's not that there won't be pain and hardship, and there's a lot of those things, but the riches that we're trying to seek here on earth with the pride of the, what is it?
Like the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh,
and the pride of life, they come through best and most holistically through actually just faithfulness to God. very often. Like when I look at the respect that both of our parents have and the rooms even that my dad goes in that so many people would love to go in, it's based off of him just being faithful to God and his family. And he gets so much respect and he gets so much honor and he has people asking his opinion and all these things. And it's like, that's not why he raised us, but there is this, or my mother, you know, she's a highly sought after woman. People value her opinion. And I'm just like, so much of it follows by just biblical
prioritization.
Yeah. That's not like a prosperity gospel, but the Lord does choose to give good gifts. Like that's where it's found most holistically. Like I really found that in just our navigation of childbearing. I think the joy in marriage is found most holistically from a selfish perspective with that sacrifice of bearing children. It's like, I don't know how it all works together because you think you're giving up this element of your marriage, or your freedom, or your body, or just all these different things, right? There's a lot of sacrifice involved, but it actually contributes one of the greatest blessings to your unity as a couple.
Yeah.
And I think of that with what you were saying with pouring into your legacy. I think men want respect and honor and things like that. And yet often you have to say no to it up front sometimes, but you reap it more on the back end. You know, I picture someone like Tom Brady where it's like he was in like the peak of his career. He had the hot wife. He had the kids. He had the football career. Now he has none of it. I saw him on a cereal box walking through Safeway the other day. And I was like, how sad.
Yeah.
You know, he's just alone. And
it is actually, it is
because he's still
like broadcasts, you know, like he'll call
and it is
anytime I see him, I'm like, that's kind of unfortunate that like,
he doesn't have the respect. He had 10 years ago.
It's like he peaked. I mean, it's just straight up peaking. Right. And I say that, of course, the Lord could do a work in his life and he could have, you know, redemption and there could be
absolutely.
Like based off of the, you know, what he's prioritized, he's peaked. And a lot of people, it's like, we're speaking kind of in human terms with the whole peaking or man's, you know, getting man's respect and man's approval. But what's ironic is that when you do that's not why you do these things. Like the greatest reward is being obedient to God. Like that is the high life. That is the abundant life. And so that's enough. Like just being obedient.
That's what detaches you from even caring.
Exactly.
About
so you don't
thinks.
Even care about it. Because all you care about is being obedient to God. But the irony is that oftentimes what follows is the admiration of man, you know, and the respect of men. So that shouldn't be the carrot, but that is kind of sometimes a, you know, little byproduct.
Well, I think of Max Lucado's book, The You Are Special, where Lucinda in there is the one Wimick, where the stars and the dots don't stick to her. And you know, everyone goes around, this is before Facebook, but all the little wooden Wimicks will give each other dots if they didn't like someone, or a star if they did like you. And the most famous Wimicks, I think they're Wimicks. I'm probably saying this wrong now. I'm second guessing. It's been a long time. Would just be covered in stars. And this one little guy, Punchinello, he's just covered in dots. But he meets this gal where none of them stick to her because she has such a close relationship with the woodcarver who made her. None of it sticks to her. None of it matters. She's like, I just love the woodcarver and I have a fulfilling life. I don't need everyone's stars and dots. And I think like as a Christian, that is just such a beautiful picture of the stars and dots just don't matter. And ironically, everyone would come up and try to give her stars because she was great.
Her demeanor. Yeah. When you've got the fruits of the spirit, love, joy, you're radiating. Radiant.
Radiating.
Yeah. people are drawn to you, but that is just a powerful illustration of like, it just doesn't really have an effect. Like whether it's whether they're negative words, whether they're positive words, whether it's man's, you know, approval or man's rejection. I was just kind of like, man, I'm doing this for the Lord.
And I think ironically, that's when the Lord gives it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
You've given up by the time you're in your 40s, 50s, and 60s, and you've done everything that the world says you shouldn't do in marriage, in raising a family, and putting your dreams on hold, or whatever the case may be, you've just gone through a lot of people's disappointment in your life. And I think of that with both of the families that we came from. They disappointed their families. They disappointed friends. They disappointed a lot of people. And by the time they're reaping the reward of everyone saying, you're actually really cool.
Yeah. They had to go through years of people saying, you're crazy. You're irresponsible. This isn't what the Lord would have for you. This is, yeah, a bad example. This is, yeah.
It's like you're so detached at that point from man's opinion, having a perspective. You've been doing things for God's economy for so long at that point. It's like, well, this doesn't change anything.
Right. It's like, hey, you're on the front of a magazine. You're kind of like, what? What magazine? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just, that's not why you're doing things anymore. So anyways, like, I'm just saying the most fruitful life is one that's lived for God's glory. I don't even know where we got off on that.
Well, I mean, yeah, we started talking along the lines of saying we're doing something for our kids. But I think my takeaway is, boy, I just always want to be evaluating. Sometimes there's questioning too in that. My heart's motives, you know, and it's not hard to see how many ulterior motives I have. And only the Lord, I do think I just want to come before him. Because, from the mouth, the heart speaks. And so there is some truth to, like, okay, it's going to come out in my mouth. It's going to come out in the things that I say. It's going to come out in my conduct. But even those things, you can disguise your heart sometimes with your words and with your conduct. And the Lord knows our hearts. And I think our hearts are truly what's going to, like, actually be what transmits the most to our kids. You can't transmit your personal faith to them, but you are transmitting your values, and they're going to see that. And that's a really challenging thought. And it just once again makes me realize how dependent I am on God and His grace and His goodness.
Mm-hmm. And something I just want to clarify at the end of this podcast is, in no way are we harping on or saying anything is negative in terms of, oh, I'd like to, you know, run a marathon and pursue that and lose a ton of weight.
Go to a fiddle contest.
Yeah, go win at a fiddle contest.
Start a business.
That might be something Elisha does do someday. Sure. And I'm sure the kids will be super proud. Like, he did do a concert, Christmas concerts every year with his family. And Elisha is a phenomenal MC. And our boys are sitting in the audience, and one in particular has a desire for the stage. And seeing his dad up there, aka Elisha, just making the audience laugh and, you know, having a meat out of the palm of his hand, inspired our son so much. You know, he was so proud of his dad to see. Again, this wasn't something this is a past skill that he's garnered. It wasn't like he's been, you know, in the basement for the last 5 years, like working on his stand-up comedy routine. But he was so, so proud of you. And he still brings that up, and he would look over, Mommy, do you see how everyone's laughing at that joke? That was a really good joke Daddy just did. Or, he just shared the whole gospel, and I heard people saying amen. And, you know, just so proud of Elisha's faith and his boldness. And so our children are proud of us. And there are so many moments where I was proud of, my parents. And so this isn't to say no to opportunities, no to stepping out of your comfort zone or any of those things. It's just being honest with what is the take going to be? And can we do this without, is it going to inhibit our child's development for the sake of our success? Are they going to pay for our success? That's really what we just want to be conscientious of.
No doubt. I think for a fact, we inspire our children by our behavior. That's not what that's 100% the case. I've said this before. My dad was the guy that picks up, like, hitchhikers and stuff. And so I'd move to the back seat. The hitchhiker would get, you know, in the front seat, and my dad would start taking him to the bus station or something, the bus stop. And, without fail, you know, my dad would present the gospel to him. And like, that's just so powerful, like mm-hmm. to see that time and time and time again. And I'm back there all squirmy because it's just kind of like, oh, this is uncomfortable. You know, he's going to ask mm-hmm. him about God. He's going to ask him about Jesus. If he knows, he's going to ask him if he knows where he's going to go when he dies. And he would just kind of do the Ray Comfort, you know, approach. And I'm like, man, that was like the best thing to witness. Mm-hmm. But that was my dad being who he was. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was acting like that and acting like who he really was. And I just want to be that type of person. You know, that's actually my conduct is something that inspires my kids because it's, and have to be true to who I am.
Because it's who you are.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So
folks, thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.